Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. Thanks for joining me.
It may not have escaped your notice, Pope Benedict recently changed the rules for electing popes and returned to the traditional requirement of a two-thirds majority throughout the balloting process. As I'm sure you know too, the last person to alter the rules for papal elections was the late Pope John Paul II, doing so in a document issued back in 1996, which allowed for an absolute majority if the cardinals were unable to reach agreement after 33 rounds of balloting. My colleague Susie Hodges picks up the story.
The voting to choose a new pope takes place in the utmost secrecy behind the locked doors of the Sistine Chapel. But at the same time, the glare of the world's media is beamed relentlessly upon the whole process, and never is the result of a ballot so keenly awaited. As a voting process, the conclave is in a class of its own when it comes to ancient rituals, elaborate and meticulous rules, and even the unusual way its outcome is announced to the outside world via the colour of smoke rising from a chimney of the Sistine Chapel. Over the centuries, the length of a conclave has varied widely. At one extreme, there's the case of a conclave held in Viterbo in the 13th century when balloting lasted 3 years. In the end, the local population became so angry at the dragged-out negotiations that they removed the roof of the cardinal's meeting hall and threatened to cut food rations unless they picked a winner. On the other hand, Pope Benedict was elected after only 4 ballots in one of the fastest conclaves in modern history. Many of the more modern-day popes have made adjustments to the balloting process over the past century or so, and now Pope Benedict has done the same. In a motu proprio, the Holy Father has decreed that the front-runner candidate for pope must have a two-thirds majority before white smoke can rise from the chimney of the Sistine Chapel. The move reverses Pope John Paul's 1996 document Universi Dominici Gregis, whereby a new pontiff could be elected by absolute majority after 33 or 34 rounds of inconclusive balloting. Father David Jaeger is a teacher of canon law at Rome's Pontifical Antonianum University. And he says Pope Benedict's new rules will help ensure that the next pontiff is elected with the widest possible consensus.
The Holy Father makes reference to the many petitions that he tells were already addressed to his predecessor, John Paul II, following the publication of the Apostolic Constitution in 1996. You see, the conclave has to assure a result. It has to elect a pope, and this was going to be perhaps more easily provided for in the norms of John Paul II. But it is also important that the conclave elect a pope who enjoys very wide support in the church. It just wouldn't do, many said, for the pope to be elected by the votes of just half the cardinals, plus one, as it were, or just more than half the cardinals. And apparently, Benedict XVI has considered at length and very carefully these arguments and has decided to reinstitute a requirement that in any case, and no matter how many votes it takes, a pope can only be elected with a two-thirds majority, although the cardinals have the option at a certain point of limiting the candidates to only the top two, those who had the largest number of votes in the last round.
One of the concerns expressed over the previous voting rules introduced by Pope John Paul was that the majority block in a conclave could push a candidate through by simply holding tight until the balloting shifted from the two-thirds majority to an absolute majority. Father Kurt Martins is an assistant professor of canon law at the Catholic University of America in Washington, D.C. He explains in detail more of those concerns.
Well, I think there were some concerns about the absolute majority, the change that was brought by John Paul II, and the concerns have been solved now by this return to the two-third majority.
Were some of these concerns the fact that there was a risk that the majority bloc in a conclave could push a candidate through by simply holding tight until the balloting shifted from the two-thirds requirement to an absolute majority? I mean, was this felt by many to be a negative thing?
Yes, that was felt by many to be a negative thing because there is quite a difference between a two-third majority and an absolute majority. And it only takes some time to wait until your time is there and to make the decision to force the election of a particular candidate. And that was a major concern of people who were worried about that new rule by John Paul II.
But isn't there a risk that with the reintroduction of a two-thirds majority requirement, that we might see the return to more lengthy conclaves? Father Kurt again.
That is a risk. That is always a risk and has always been a risk. However, if you look at history, the latest conclaves were all very short. Even the conclave that elected Pope Benedict XVI was a very short conclave. So I don't see much of a problem. I think it's a wise measure that Pope Benedict returns to the two-third majority.
Father David says there's another reason why modern-day conclaves are likely to remain short.
We saw how extraordinarily quick the election of the present pope was, and I think that in the modern world, with the incredible pressure of the news media and the whole world all around, it is inconceivable that the cardinals would spend any inordinate length of time in electing a pope. They would simply not permit themselves to do that, knowing that there is a reality outside of the conclave and that they would soon have to return to that reality, and that the church's image and the confidence of the faithful themselves might thereby suffer some harm. No, I don't think there's any danger of that. I think that, but of course the Holy Father has to provide, as any legislator has to provide, for all possible contingencies, not only for those that at this moment seem the likeliest.
Apart from receiving petitions for a return to the two-thirds majority, a number of church officials and other observers had questioned the rule banning cardinals from over 80 from taking part in a conclave. However, Pope Benedict, who turned 80 himself this year, has maintained that requirement. So do we know why the present pope decided to retain this ban? Father David again.
This norm had actually already been introduced by Pope Paul VI. John Paul II simply confirmed it and kept it in place. It is, however, very interesting to note that the Code of Canon Law, in its own treatment of the laws governing cardinals, although it deals with a number of matters that outsiders would think perfectly trivial, such as changing your cardinalatial title or matters of ceremonial precedence, nowhere mentions the 80-year limit. And that was in 1983, and it was taken widely to mean that John Paul II had been at least persuaded not to have it written in stone. However, by the time he came to write Universi Dominici Gregis 13 years later, he did still preserve it. There have been many cardinals and others over the years who have suggested that it was not appropriate, especially as we all battle ageism nowadays, to limit the age of the cardinal electors. Some said it was unbiblical, given that the Bible portrays the aged as the seat of wisdom and prudence.
In addition to reintroducing the requirement for a two-thirds majority throughout the balloting process, Pope Benedict has stipulated that the two candidates who emerge as the front runners in the balloting should abstain from voting in the later rounds. Father Kurt says this too is reverting to a previous rule of the past that barred a candidate from voting for himself.
Well, in earlier conclave rules, there was this rule that a Pope should be elected with a two-third majority plus one vote. That was to avoid that candidates would vote for themselves. And this is the same concern that is behind. You shouldn't vote for yourself. It's the others. The others have to vote. So that's the reason why they have this new rule, I guess.
Father David, on the other hand, takes a different view on whether it is right for a candidate to vote for himself.
As a canonist, I find it very interesting because you see, in olden times, a vote given for oneself was not valid. So the required majority was two-thirds plus one. This all changed after the promulgation of the new Code of Canon Law in 1983. According to the new code, there is no longer ever any prohibition on voting for yourself, which I habitually explain to students is perfectly reasonable. If you think in conscience that you are the best qualified person for the job, you would be sinning against your conscience if you did not vote for yourself. There's no point for an imposed humility, a sort of courtly form of humility to reign. And indeed, with the norms of John Paul II, it was no longer necessary in any case for the two-thirds majority to be augmented by one. By taking away the active right to vote from the two top candidates at that late stage in the conclave, the Holy Father seems to hark back in some sense to the earlier way of thinking about voting for oneself, or perhaps he doesn't himself. He just wishes for even people who oppose voting for oneself to have no doubt at all about the rightness, the correctness of the two-thirds vote, the moral correctness of the two-thirds vote. So this is a very interesting point indeed.
And do we know how many times the rules governing the election of a pope have been changed down the centuries?
They have been changed a number of times, and as we said most recently, more than changed, fine-tuned rather, in some details by Paul VI and John Paul II, and now further fine-tuned by Benedict XVI.
Turning to the voting process itself, it's extremely elaborate and it lays down meticulous rules to prevent the use of fraud, influence or security lapses. Are they generally felt to be up to scratch?
Well, as you said, they are very meticulous and very detailed. And of course, they have a reason to be, because it is extremely important to make sure that the Pope who is elected is validly elected, given the unparalleled power that the Roman Pontiff possesses. However, there is, of course, a natural limit to any provisions of this kind. If we bear in mind that the cardinals are some of the most distinguished persons on earth, with the highest standards of conduct, and that we cannot simply construct the election laws and conditions as if it were a common meeting of any sort of board, or perhaps a not very reputable board. So there is an element of trust that must go into it, but the provisions are very, very detailed indeed, they are.
According to Father Kurt, the elaborate and meticulous character of the conclave voting rules is not just to ensure a free and fair ballot, but also to prevent people from outside from trying to influence the outcome of an election where so much is at stake.
Well, it's not only fraud, it's also influence from outside. The only ones who have the right to elect a pope are the members of the College of Cardinals, now reduced to the members of the College of Cardinals below the age of 80. There have been influences from outside, like civil powers who wanted to influence the outcome of the conclave. For instance, in 1903, when the conclave that elected Pope Pius X was confronted with a veto by the Austrian Emperor against the then Secretary of State, Cardinal Rampolla. So there have been ways of people trying to influence the outcome of a conclave, but it's only the College of Cardinals that elects in a very precise way the new pontiff, and they should be only assisted by the Holy Spirit.
My thanks there go to my colleague Susie Hodges and her guests today, Father David Jaeger, a professor of canon law at Rome's Pontifical Antonianum University, and Father Kurt Martens, an assistant professor of canon law at the Catholic University of America in Washington.
Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.